All right, we'll get started here with the Sooners Extra post-game podcast / Twitter space after OU's wacky 28-13 win over Oklahoma State on Saturday night here at Gaylord Family Oklahoma Memorial Stadium. And Justin, really got to start off with the way that this game played out. A barrage from the Sooners early, built a 28-0 lead by the end of the first quarter, and then that offense sort of disappeared, but the defense stuck around and really won this game for OU.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, quite the fireworks display there in the first quarter. I mean, the offense came out on fire. The defense was really playing well off of that as well, getting turnovers. And then we just kind of saw that offense really cool off down the stretch. I mean, not even down the stretch, the other three quarters. I mean, they went scoreless the rest of the way after that. So, I mean, you know, I thought the clock management could have been a lot better for the offense after that first quarter. I thought that, they weren't able to get their conversions on third and fourth down. Luckily, that defense was able to kind of bend but not break the whole rest of the way, even when he was trying to get something going in the second half.
Yeah, they really did. OU had 299 yards of offense in the first quarter, just 135 through the last three quarters of the game. Jenny, when we're talking about that OU defense, what to you was the biggest difference in what they did today versus, you know, what we've seen them do for much of the season?
Two things before I start. Number one, to all you people listening live currently to this, kudos to you. It's after 1 o'clock in the morning. I don't know who you are. I don't know where you are, but thanks for listening. Number two, yeah, Justin, you just said luckily that OU defense. Like, how many times has that been said over the course of the season? It's a pretty limited number. So I think it goes without saying that, this was a different kind of game for this OU defense. And, you know, they got turnovers, four interceptions. They got turnovers on downs, three and outs. They faced 19 possessions tonight, guys, and they gave up one touchdown. As our good buddy Barry Trammell, who I'm walking with, does his efficiency rankings, I don't think there's been many games that he's looked at that a team has faced 19 possessions, only given up one touchdown. So, just an impressive, impressive night. A lot went right for the Sooners. They got pressure when they needed to. They contained Spencer Sanders well. You know, I think it was just top to bottom a really, really solid performance for this OU defense.
Yeah, the turnovers are going to be what stands out there. Three interceptions in the game's first 20 minutes. Had four overall. Went to Deshaun White, sort of game sealer. They're late at the goal line. But to me, it was about getting pressure on Spencer Sanders, making him throw passes early. You know, the Sooners had plenty of other chances to force even more turnovers. There were several balls that hit off their hands and bounced away, or they could have finished there. Weren't able to do that, but they were able to finish enough of them. On the flip side, weren't able to take advantage of many of them, only scored 7 points off of those turnovers, but, able to take possessions away from the Cowboys. And in a game like this where, yardage and field position became such a big deal, that was a massive turn in the Sooners' direction. But, Justin, let's go back to some of the issues that OU had late. Offensively, had to punt on, I believe it was their last nine possessions, all nine possessions of the second half until the one at the very end when Dylan Gabriel was able to just take a knee and that was it. But a lot that went wrong there. At the top of it, in my mind, was clock management. And I asked Brent Venables this after the game. He said he was not happy at all with it. They only had one drive that lasted more than 91 seconds on the night in that stretch where they punted all those times in a row, didn't have a drive that lasted more than, I believe, 81 seconds. So just how disappointing is that? And it's almost like, how does that, something like that happen, that you're not able to grind more clock down in a game like this, especially the second half like this?
Yeah, especially, you know, situational, you know, you're up big. You want to start to kind of grind this clock out, like you mentioned, just to be able to do that and also give the defense a break. I mean, they had to go out there on the field 19 times. And like I said, like we've been talking about, fortunately, the defense was able to bend but not break. But that's a tough position to put your group in, you know. So the offense definitely would have liked to have seen them be able to kind of bleed out the clock a little bit more there. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think definitely the clock management was a big part of that. It's a big part of the reason why OSU was able to really try to make it competitive down a stretch there.
And, Jenny, how much of that do you feel like is on Jeff Lebby? How much of it is on Dylan Gabriel? How much of it is on Brent Venables? You know, that element of things there in the second half with clock management.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to fall a little bit on everybody, don't you think? I mean, I looked in the second half for sure. No drive over 90 seconds for the Oklahoma offense. And that included, you know, after Deshaun White gets that interception. I have been waiting for the day I did that. Deshaun White gets the interception. That's like 5.5 minutes left. And you think, you know, Oklahoma could run out the clock at this point. Oklahoma State had two more possessions after that, for crying out loud. I mean, they didn't even hold on to the ball for a minute and a half after that. So, you know, for them to not be able to go into some sort of, you know, slowdown mode to tell Dylan Gabriel to at least let the play clock get down below 10, for crying out loud. I mean, 10, somebody's – yeah,
below
20.
There was a right after Deshaun White's interception, I think the third down play there, the snap came with 27 seconds, I believe, on the play clock, which is just mind-boggling at that point to let that happen.
Yeah, you can't let that happen. And, yeah, I mean, does that fall on Gabriel to a degree? Does that fall on Lebby to a degree? But it has to fall on Brent as well. I mean, somebody's got to be the adult in the room and stand up and say, hey, we can't be snapping the ball with 27 seconds on the play clock. We got to run some clock here. So, yeah, just all around not good. They'll need to address that moving forward for sure.
Yeah, they're definitely going to have to, because that was a big mark against them there in the second half. And also Justin struggled to run the ball after halftime, and obviously Eric Gray's been so good. We saw Javonte Barnes do some good things tonight, but they weren't able to capitalize off of an Oklahoma State defense that had really struggled to stop the run to this point.
Yeah, definitely doesn't help that, you know, Andrew Rain wasn't able to suit up for this one. We got to see Robert Conjol in there instead, and then also Wanya Morris went down. I believe that was, what, late second, midway through the third, somewhere around there. So Tyler got.
Yeah, I think it was in the third quarter, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. So, I mean, definitely that doesn't help with it. You know, the offensive line has really been setting the tone for that run game throughout the season. I mean, they've been one of the few groups that's actually been constantly improving this season. So injuries there. But yeah, I mean, just overall, you know, you expect a little bit more out of Eric Gray, especially the way that he's been performing as of late. It just goes back to, you know, to the defense. I mean, just their ability to really pick things up when the offense is struggling, because after that first quarter, I mean, there was plenty of time for OSU to mount that comeback and come back and win this game. But, you know, I think the defense just found a way to keep OU out of there in front.
I just got to, first of all, say thank goodness I made it to the warmth of my car.
No kidding.
After that that walk back after the game. Finally in a little bit more climate-controlled environment if this heater will kick on. But
thank goodness for heated seats, guys. Woo!
Yes.
It's hard to just breathe and talk. I mean, I'm just like, I was having to catch my breath.
Hey, another round of kudos due to the fans that hung in there the whole game, because I know I was out there for, what, the second half of the fourth quarter, And my feet were froze. So, guys, it was cold out there today.
Yeah, it definitely was. And, you know, we saw some cold last week in Morgantown, but this was different. You know, obviously last week had the rain to deal with.
Oxen layered up on the coats and everything, but it's still really, really cold out there. But, you know, they were able to still make some plays. You know, the to me, one of the most impressive things, and obviously wound up being impressive in more ways than just his performance, was Michael Turk tonight. 11 punts, averaged almost 50 yards a punt, had a couple of 60-plus yarders there in the second half. And they really needed him to come through, Jenny, and he did.
Yeah, for sure. I thought he was really impressive. And, you know, I think we have come to realize what he can do as far as, you know, the really booming kicks, you know, those 60-type yard kicks that he can make. But he had some that were impressive in how, you know, the field position switch inside the 20. He had one early that looked like it was definitely going to the end zone. He boomed it so far. And it did like a sand wedge back pedal at about the 1 or 2 yard line, set up the, you know, Sooner defense in great position. OSU offense, not so great. But yeah, it was definitely a fantastic, you know, night for him. Probably on the magnitude of punts that nobody in Sooner Crimson will see anytime soon, to have 11 punts. Just, you know, there were times last year when, or over the last course of the last few years that, you know, it'd be 3 or 4 games before a Sooner punter would get that many punts. So I don't think they want to do that again. The way they started, you'd have never thought that was going to happen. But obviously that came in hugely important for them as that game wore on and they were playing a field position battle in a lot of ways, trying to keep Oklahoma State at bay.
Yeah, Jenny, the last Sooners punter to have 11 punts in a game, Jeff Ferguson, way back in, I believe it was 2001, against North Carolina. So it had been quite a bit since they'd seen anything like that.
Yeah, I was. If you would have pressed me, I would have not thought back into those days, because those were some really good offensive days as well. But yeah, you know, and the fact that both teams had 19 possessions today, I mean, it was just a crazy game. I mean, the way the game started, you might have thought, well, this game's going to have a lot of possessions, because, you know, I think we, before I knew it, I looked up and we were on like our 10th overall possession. But still, for that game to continue at a pace where it's basically possession, 3, 4, 5 plays, punt, or result, and then you're doing it again, I mean, that was crazy. I don't remember many games that went quite like that game went. And, you know, we've kind of sprinkled in defensive talk as we've gone here, but, you know, the defense not relenting when they faced over 100 plays, you know, when they've had ups and downs this year, more downs than they would like, you know, just how they hung in there, I thought was really impressive, because it would have been really easy, as, you know, Oklahoma State kept getting chance after chance after chance, for that defense to say, oh boy, you know what, you know, we can't do this again. You know, we can't keep getting stops, but they did. They figured out a way. And I thought that was really, really impressive. All things considered, the night itself, but also the season as a whole.
Yeah. They were able to come up in a big way, got bowl eligible. OU is able to continue that streak. Only Georgia has a longer active bowl streak than the Sooners now. And Justin, that's a big, just emotional lift for this team. And, you know, I mentioned this, I'm going to write a little bit about it later tonight, probably. But, you know, early on, as they build that 28-point lead, it felt like sort of a cathartic moment, not only for the team on the field, but OU fans to finally get to revel a little bit this season, and certainly in Big 12 play. Obviously, it took a turn as the game went on, but still just a big emotional lift for them to get to that sixth win, secure bowl eligibility. And, you know, obviously they want to finish strong next week at Texas Tech. But a big milestone for them in Brent Venables' first season.
For sure. I mean, it's big for a lot of reasons. You know, for the veterans, it's one last ride to be able to go to another bowl game. For the young guys, it's experience, you know, especially those extra practices leading up to the bowl game. Like you said, for Brent, first season, obviously a lot of ups and downs, but to be able to still be able to make a bowl game is big. On the recruiting trail, I mean, to be able to pitch that, you know, that, hey, season hasn't gone the way we wanted, but we're trying to finish strong here. You know, I mean, there's just a lot of different ways you can look at it where it definitely is. There's a lot of positives to take from that. So, like we said, the season has not gone the way that OU was expecting, but to get a bowl game, just from talking to everybody after the game, it sounds like it really means a lot to them.
Hey, I'll jump in here too, Ryan. I mean, I think that, you know, it sounds like that this class that OU's gotten together so far, you know, is pretty solid. They lost the kid, as we talked a week or two ago, to Texas commitment-wise. And, you know, but it sounds like they're, you know, not necessarily leaking a lot of oil on these other guys. So maybe the rest of those commits hold. But you got to think it's going to be hard to go out and convince any other 4- and 5-star guys to potentially join the class. I mean, I know David Hicks, I think the guy who committed to Texas A&M was in tonight for a visit. You know, that's the type of guy that could really elevate this group if you know, OU were to get a guy like that. But it's hard to make that sell if you're not going to a bowl game. I mean, everybody goes to a bowl game anymore. I know Oklahoma's got the second longest current streak going, but you know, there was a time when going to a bowl was a hard thing to do. Now, you know, most teams just fall out of bed and they make a bowl, but OU getting eligible, I think, was a big, you know, was a big step in the right direction. Yes, they're struggling, and yes, they can still go out and talk to recruits about, hey, if you can come in and you can play, you can get on the field early, we want you, we need you. They can make that pitch, but at the same time, they're not sitting at home when bowl season is happening, they're out there playing. So I think it's, you know, I think it's the better of, you know, both scenarios that they get a chance to be in a bowl. So I think that's big. And, you know, having a performance that, you know, was a winning performance tonight, maybe not perfect in every way, but I thought that was pretty big for all those guys and their families that were in the stands looking at the Sooners tonight.
Yeah, Justin, and going back to you, this was a big recruiting night for David Hicks was in town. They had you know, some of those Denton Geyer guys in town, and this gave them a chance to not only sell their program, but show, you know, compare themselves to the program on the other side. That, you know, they don't recruit against each other a ton, but certainly in the state, that has an impact, and in certain other spots it does. But certainly a solid start for the Sooners. We'll see how much of an impact it has down the road. But they certainly had a chance to show out for an impressive group of recruits.
Yeah, you could tell before the game even kicked off. I mean, you had the LED light shows, you had the fireworks, you had the whatever you call that, the fire spraying machine, I think is what the name I came up with when I looked it up on Google or whatever. I mean, that's all that was going on for that entrance for OU when they ran onto the field. I mean, they were putting on a show, and they did that in the first quarter as well. Like you said, doing it in front of some commits, Jackson Arnold being one example, but also some guys who maybe they're hoping they might be able to flip. Arnold's teammate, Peyton Bowen, a 5-star safety, like we mentioned, David Hicks as well. So, yeah, I mean, this games like this are really big on the recruiting trip for all the reasons that you guys just said. So, definitely a big win, not just for making the bowl game, but also for, you know, hopefully having another selling point, I guess, with the recruits.
Yeah, and then Jenny, Justin mentioned explosiveness early. I guess we do need to talk about the good stuff that happened early in the game. with the Sooners building that quick 28-point lead, I thought that they really made an effort to, one, get Marvin Mims going, but just get the passing game going in general. Didn't really try to stretch the field a ton on that first couple drives, except for really the Drake Stoops, the long catch there, and then obviously Jahlil Farouk's touchdown catch on the second drive. But just sort of put Dylan Gabriel in a position to have success early with those quick throws out to the outside, a dump off to Eric Gray. And, that offense was humming along like really we haven't seen it, certainly since Big 12 play began.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point about the fact that they were moving the ball very effectively without taking those deep shots, which I think that everybody within the walls of, you know, OU football headquarters wants that deep shot, wants those, long connections to happen. I think that's been a hallmark of the offense over the last decade. And I believe that Jeff Lebby wants that to be one of the things that his offenses are known for, but it hasn't been, it hasn't been there all the time this year. And, that's, if it hits, it's great. But if it doesn't, it becomes sort of a lost down. And, I think Oklahoma saw that they had a chance to really get going with some short and intermediate stuff. And even though they didn't throw it long in the air very much those first couple possessions, even maybe stretching through the first quarter, you saw them with huge chunks. There were, sort of in the smaller chunk realm of, 12, 15 type yards. But then you saw some 30s, some high 20s, just some plays that are moving the chains, quickly down the field. And again, this wasn't Dylan Gabriel throwing it 30 yards in the air in most cases. It was, throw it 15 and let somebody get a little bit more. And I thought that was a really effective strategy. If you want me to tell you why it went away and it didn't work as well the last three quarters, I'm not sure I have a great answer for that. But I thought that was a really good way to get Dylan Gabriel comfortable and, his first rivalry, big rivalry game as the OU quarterback. He's obviously played in other rivalry games other places, but nothing of this magnitude with that kind of crowd and attention and, night game on ABC. So I think that was important too, and it clearly worked. I mean, they've got stuff they got to go comb through the wreckage of the last three quarters. But that first quarter, there wasn't too much that you didn't like about what you saw out of the Sooner offense.
Although, it's crazy to think about, though, that, even with that 28-0 lead and everything going right, the biggest lead that they've had and after one quarter in Bedlam history, the second most yards they'd had in any quarter in program history, their most in a first quarter, 299, there was still some meat left on the bone there, though. They turned the ball over. Braden Willis fumbles when they're getting ready to go up 28-0. They don't take advantage off of two of those turnovers in the first half. Only scored on after the one that Jonah Laulu returns to the four. So, as good as they were, there's still some opportunities there for them to be even better if they're able to finish on some things. But Justin, in the second half, and really in the second quarter, things started to turn with just, I think it was 66 yards of total offense in the second quarter, if I'm not mistaken, after that. But, you look at, to me, the offensive line struggle. I think Robert Congell certainly didn't have one of his better games. I thought he was pretty good last week coming on in replacement of Andrew Rame after the injury. Not so much today. They lose Wandier Morris. But, not being able to convert on third downs once again. They were 1 of 14, I believe, tonight. So that's 2 of 25 over the last couple weeks. Got stopped just short of a fourth down conversion, too. Dylan Gabriel completes just one pass in the second half, and that wasn't until, about 9 minutes left in the game, I think. I want to say he was 0 for 11 overall, or 0 for 11 there in the second half, because I know he missed on a couple of to end the first half. But what to you was maybe the most concerning thing about that dynamic there in the last three quarters?
I think definitely the low conversion rate. I mean, 1 of 15 when you include that they also weren't able to convert on that one fourth down attempt. So, I mean, just the inability to extend those drives, I think it's obviously a big concern. You know, of course, you're also looking for Dylan Gabriel to be more efficient with the ball on a more consistent basis. That's something that we've been talking about a lot this season. But yeah, I mean, the past 2 weeks, they just haven't been able to convert on third and fourth down. And that's obviously, you know, it's very difficult to move down the field when you're not doing that. So, yeah, I mean, I would definitely say that's probably the biggest concern on that side of the ball as of late.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. And you know, we'll get ready to wrap things up there on this late night here after the Bedlam win. But, Jenny, your final thoughts on the night and the game and, you know, anything we haven't touched on that you want to bring up?
You know, it's definitely sort of one of those it's not going to fit into the instant classic box that we've had a lot of Bedlam games fit into in recent years. Lots of close games, lots of tight fits, you know, just games that had great plays and big moments. And I'm not sure this game fits in there. I don't know exactly where it does fit. It'll be interesting to see how we think about this in another couple years. But I think for Brent Venables, I think for this team, I think for this program, this was a big night. You know, didn't finish the way they wanted to necessarily with the, you know, I think Brent mentioned at one point, not able to put the nail in the coffin. And that's absolutely true. You know, they had a chance to really, really step on Oklahoma State and didn't do that in the game. But still, for this team to win a rivalry game, finish out their home slate with a win, not have another string of losses, not have to go to Texas Tech next week trying to get bowl eligible. I think there's a lot of positives in a season that, you know, has not necessarily been heavy on positives. And I think that that's, you know, for a program that's trying to get its under it, you know, and set the standard for coming years, I think that's a big moment. We, you know, again, we may not remember it as one of those classic Bedlam games like we've seen over the last couple decades, but for this program, it could end up being, you know, one of the bigger moments of this first year of Brent Venables.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is going to go to what becomes of it, what becomes of the rest of this season, what becomes of the program in the future. I think certainly if, you know, they're able to turn it back around and build that program up into what Brent Venables wants, this could be one of those sort of turning point moments for them. And that would magnify the importance of this game. If it doesn't happen, obviously that changes the dynamic there. But the Sooners, one more game to go in the regular season next week against Texas Tech. That'll be a night game in Lubbock. All three of us will be out there you know, to see how the Sooners finish it off. You know, interesting matchup with Matt Wells being on OU staff after you know, getting fired there in Lubbock last year. I know a couple of – or one of the players I talked to after the game, Marvin Mims, said, you know, they wanted to go get a win for him in that one. But, you know, the Red Raiders, I believe, didn't they secure a bowl eligibility tonight with the win over Iowa State? So that'll be about improving bowl position for both of those two teams. You know, I still think on the OU side that it's hard for me to imagine them dropping past the Liberty Bowl. I think Texas and the Liberty are the two most likely. You know, we'll see, though, how this whole thing plays out over the next couple weeks. But certainly a big win for the Sooners tonight, 28-13 over Oklahoma State in Bedlam. We're going to get out of there here. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend. Have a great Thanksgiving week. We'll be back Tuesday or Wednesday with another one of these previewing that game at Texas Tech. Thank you so much for joining us. You can check out our work every day at Oklahoman.com and every morning in the Oklahoman for the best OU coverage anywhere.